Our guest tonight is Arun Chowdhury. Arun was the first official videographer of President Barack Obama and just released his first book, First Cameraman, documenting the Obama presidency in real time. How are you doing, Arun?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So, Arun, why write a book?
Well, you know, I know it's a little funny because I'm not a writer, you know, by nature. I'm a filmmaker. And so people always ask, why didn't you, you know, make a documentary or, you know, get ready for that kind of thing. But, you know, when I was leaving the White House and really starting to think about my experiences, the thing that jumped out at me the most of how lucky I was not just that I got to be backstage with the President of the United States, which certainly was a great thing, but that I was at the crossroads of kind of technology and politics and art all coming together in a very, very specific way in 2008. And, you know, someone like me whose background is in fiction filmmaking and kind of, you know, very heavily invested in the arts, it was a very rare opportunity to cross over into this mysterious world of politics.
And because you were the first videographer, you had to ask yourself a lot of questions about how you were going to go about documenting President's everyday activities.
Yeah, no, that's right. You know, there wasn't really a roadmap. It was the very first thing. And the thing that was the most important to me in approaching the job of the White House was to approach it cautiously, because I knew if I kind of overstepped what expectations were, which were sort of, you know, open-ended, that all of a sudden there'd be this list of things you could and couldn't cover. And I used to call it the laundry list. And I just wanted to avoid that at all times. I wanted to be able to try to use my judgment as best I could as to how to approach something as hard as, you know, documenting a presidency.
How much freedom did you have?
I was given an awful amount of freedom. I was really allowed to do, to sort of go about the task as I thought fit. You know, people would sometimes suggest, hey, maybe this would be interesting, you should cover it, or this meeting, since I think it's going to be really cool, you should check it out. But more often than not, I would decide myself in the morning what events I wanted to go to, and then people would either sort of be happy that I had picked their event to cover, or, you know, it was less people requesting and more people, you know, being thankful if I was able to highlight, say, an issue that was important to them.
And the way you thought about your work, its importance, its relevance, shaped the way you presented the president.
That's right. You know, the very conscious decision I made when considering how I was going to do this was, how do I present the presidency in a transparent way that that is true? And the most important thing to me was to not sort of glorify it. What I say, like making the sort of ordinary things of the presidency seem really fantastic, but actually taking what is this fantastic process, you know, of the presidency and making it mundane, because people have a false sense of what it's really like. They think it must be state dinners and fancy ballrooms, but more often than not, what being president means is that you go through every building through a security entrance. You're always in the freight elevator. You're always on the loading dock. You know, it's a lot of gray concrete and sort of, you know, unhappy atmospheres, and it's, I think, not what people expect when they think about what it's like to be president, and I think it very much, though, rings true when they see it.
And there's something that really surprised me in reading your book is that you talked a lot about being authentic and how Obama is an authentic person.
Well, he's a very rare sort of brand of authenticity in that he is the same person on and off camera, which, as I can tell you, as a filmmaker, is extraordinarily rare in anyone, and especially a politician, who are always sort of pretending to be the statesman. And so I think that was the only reason that a project like mine was allowed to continue, because people all the way from the, you know, the lower level communication staffers to the senior advisors thought, sure, this is great. You know, he is always himself, and I think that's really going to work. And more importantly, I think people underestimate the audience when it comes to political media. They think, oh, they're so easily manipulated. But actually, people recognize authenticity on film, and they latch on to it. And I think that's what you find in things like these debates that have been coming on in the U.S. for the last couple months. You know, the president is someone who can't fake it. He wasn't that into that first debate, and people jumped on it. They saw it. Like, he looks listless, looks like he's not interested. He probably was thinking about something else, you know, and was not. And he's not someone who can just kind of hype it up when he needs to.
Right.
So I think it's important for people to realize. Or then again, in this last debate, you know, I think people jumped on this binders thing with Mitt Romney, not because it was the most awful statement he'd ever said, but because it was emblematic of something they already recognized through camera. I think people are extraordinarily good judges of character, and that any politician giving enough time on camera reveals who they really are.
Do you think that being authentic is a quality for a politician?
I think it's a quality and an asset. So, I mean, it's not to say that an inauthentic politician cannot rise through the ranks. I think that they can, but this whole area that I'm talking about, this whole way of communicating with people through video is something that's not accessible to them. I think it's why you see the Romney campaign not relying on video as much, the McCain campaign didn't. They just happen to have two candidates who don't translate well in terms of authenticity on video. That's not to say it's a partisan thing at all. I think there are some Republicans, like, for instance, Chris Christie in New Jersey, who are fantastically authentic on video. I mean, you get 100% Jersey out of Chris Christie, Governor Chris Christie, at any given time. So I think it's, you never know until you put them under the gun, right, until you actually start filming.
And you also mentioned that Newt Gingrich was a very authentic person under the camera.
That's true. He absolutely, you know, in fact, he uses his authenticity as a weapon sometimes, you know, almost like a challenge. Like in a debate or something, people will be like, do you really believe what you just said? And like kind of throwing it in your face in a way that you'll say, well, that's not really what I meant. And he'll just look you right in the face and say, yes. You know? Because he actually says things that he means all the time. And, you know, when you do that, there's less to remember when you're yourself. And I think it's why you find the best debate performances are live or spontaneous. Extemporaneous speaking of any kind are always done by the politicians who do act like themselves because they don't need to be as scripted.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, you speak on one hand of authentic, and these politicians in debates or just in daily living, they're so well prepared that a lot of what they say is scripted or is just automatic. And yet, in being automatic or scripted, like you say, there's this authentic flavor that still comes out.
That's right, and people really latch onto it. And I think it's why you see when you have a candidacy where you don't put yourself out there all the time, when you aren't transparent, when you try to totally script it, then the moments where you are unscripted, like a debate, become so much more crucial and people hang on them some more because people have, I think, an internal gauge of, do I really have a sense of this person yet? And they're not going to be satisfied with 100 negative ads about the other guy. They actually want to take a look under the hood. They want to kick the tires and see what these guys are made of.
Because you were hired by the White House to be the videographer for Barack Obama, how do you see media's portray of politics?
You know, I think so often, and I don't have an explanation for it other than a lot of the conventional wisdom about the changing journalism and competition from organizations like BuzzFeed and things like this, but to an extent, it's always been this way, but now it seems like it's this on steroids. The media narrative of what happens in these presidential elections does not always conform to the actual narrative of what's happening. You know, oftentimes they prop up someone who's not doing that well or try to bring down someone who is doing well to keep it interesting, you know, like in the same way that people always suspect that the networks have their hands in baseball to make sure the World Series will go the full seven games if they can. You know, I think there is a sense of, is this president election going to go through all of the innings? And so you find it's funny because people were even writing about it, say, in August, being like, well, after the Democratic convention, what will happen is after the first debate, which Mitt Romney will definitely win, the president will, you know what I mean? Everyone always knew it was going to be a close election, but instead of the reporting saying this is going to be a close election, this is going to be a close election, they report on these kind of micro trends up and down to make it seem like there's these radical movements, you know, in the polls and stuff. When if you ask people a year ago, is it going to be a close election? Yes, it's going to be a close election. We have a closely divided electorate who have different visions of how America should be. And so it's so funny how the media can kind of believe their own hype and kind of run with it.
A certain part of the population are disillusioned by politics and rhetoric from politicians. Why do you think that?
I think a lot of it has to do with negative campaigning. And, you know, this is getting worse in the U.S. post-Citizens United, where people are corporations. Everyone is able to just pump in untold amounts of anonymous money into what ends up just being negative attacks. And everyone talks about them and knows it's scorched earth policy, and when you write a negative attack, then people are turned off from the process. But it seems to still be working to an extent, and so people just keep on doing it. And I talk about it like it's MSG, you know, kind of like them, but it dulls your brain after a while. And I like to think that some of the work we did with the president in 2008 in his election and then in the White House in terms of West Wing Week is in some way an antidote to that stuff. Mm-hmm. It actually injects some content that not only is authentic and maybe transparent, but also I think somehow has a positive attitude. You know, West Wing Week, for instance, reads like a White House press release. It is the White House's point of view. There's no denying that it should only exist in tandem with a free press who, you know, also report on the news. But my commitment to making it a positive experience, no matter what was happening that week, to try to keep it upbeat, even when you're talking about tragic things, is, I think, in response to try to tell people, you know, negative stuff works, negative stuff gets eyeballs, negative stuff gets ratings, but I think it's hurting our psyche as a people.
Right.
And so I almost think about it like the slow food movement. I think it needs to be a slow, kind of steady and generally upbeat news movement where it doesn't matter about breaking a story in the next 24 hours. It's actually about giving information in a calm, reasoned manner. I think the kind of thing we used to rely on the evening news for, but when was the last time anyone you know watched the evening news?
I watch it every day.
You actually watch the network evening news? I'm curious.
I watch actually local news.
Right. So, I mean, there isn't, you know, you're not watching whoever the equivalent of Walter Cronkite is. There is not that sort of measured voice of a nation. You do have the CBC in Canada, which I think helps unify to some extent, you know, something we don't have in the States.
Yeah.
But I think there's a similar problem, though.
What has changed in your view of politics? Because you've been so closely following the president and his staff. What has changed in your mind about day-to-day politics in America?
Well, you know, I didn't know a lot about how things actually worked until getting to the White House and seeing things being governed. And I guess the one thing that it never occurred to me really is you think, oh, these people run the country. But actually, you know, any problem that makes it all the way up to the president's desk is a crappy, hard problem to solve, or somebody would have solved it before it got to the president's desk, right? So I guess I didn't think of it as this, as that the presidency is really a series of decisions that are marginal. Right, it's not this binary thing we think about. It's like Kennedy said no to the Russians, Cuban Missile Crisis averted, like it was all good. Like there are very few times that are like that. Mm. Most of the times you are trying to do your best with your staff to make that 53% decision to be like, this is a little bit better than this, so we need to do this. And I also didn't think, I underestimated the emotional toll and the emotional intelligence required to be president. You know, I don't think we think about it that much, but on any given day, the president is not only sitting in the Situation Room plotting big decisions or working on domestic policy, but he is taking time to greet the Boy Scouts and to do all the things that we expect of our leader. And to be able to go from, you know, comforting a grieving family to saying hello to the Teacher of the Year, I mean, it does require a certain type of emotional intelligence that I think is something that we look for consciously or subconsciously in all of our presidents.
And you know, one of the things that you spoke about, which was fascinating in your book, First Cameraman, documenting the Obama presidency in real time, is the bubble. And the bubble protecting the president so that only the important decision that he has to make comes into the bubble so that he's protected from...
Yeah, you know, or to make sure that he's not presented with decisions that his entire staff hasn't weighed in on yet. You know, it's someone's job. It's the staff secretary is the position, which definitely doesn't show the true importance of this position, but to make sure every piece of paper, a memo to the president, has been looked at by, say, you know, by the people who are supposed to advise him on that, so that someone doesn't just put something in front of his face that hasn't been looked at by other folks. Just keeping track of all that is so important because the president has advisors and has people he's appointed because he wants their unvarnished opinions. And you have to make sure that not only does the president see it, but the people who he has employed to help him make these decisions also all see them. You know, you don't just run something up to the president and be like, hey, real quick, what do you think? You know, red or blue? Color for the wallpaper. It's not like that.
Are you optimistic about political life in the U.S. right now?
I think the main problem in American politics, and this is, you know, from my time spent with Barack Obama looking at a lot of other elected officials, is that we need to, as a country, elect more impressive people to our Congress. Our Congress is where the laws are made. And having to see a lot of politicians up front, I don't feel like Americans are electing the best of our society to do the most important thing in our society, which is figure out how our society is going to work. Mm. And I think that's a major institutional problem. I think the idea of government and public service is not attracting the best of the best. And I do think that Barack Obama's ascendancy to the presidency has ushered in a new sense of public service, but as you know, incumbent, you know, intransigence takes a long time to change, and I find the caliber of the average politician in America to be sub what I think it ought to be.
You know, one of the things that I think that surprised me the most about your book is the freedom that you had in writing it first, but also for you in documenting the president's everyday activities. And you also mentioned that in about, 5 years, all the videos that you've taken will become public.
That's right.
Which is actually surprised me because you realize that, you know, this is very free.
People were very, very free about it. And again, I think that sense of let's let a run kind of pursue this project was based in people's absolute belief in who Barack Obama was. I think, say, a President Bachman or a President Romney might not necessarily want an official videographer because of a specific reason. You know, later all the stuff is going to come out. You know, this morning, Carolyn Kennedy, she's just promoting, they have done what I hope to do with the President's Archives, but unlike most of the President's Archives, which are just a big mess, they are starting to go through and tag everything. And this morning they just released this amazing, amazing audio tape recording of John F. Kennedy talking to General Eisenhower about the Cuban Missile Crisis and being like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this thing. Do you think that's a bad idea? You know, and Eisenhower was like, no, you know, I know all these guys and I don't think they're going to declare war over this and you got to do it, you know. And Kennedy kind of laughs and is like, all right, well, you hang tight because I'm doing this thing. And you're like, whoa, how is it that this phone call has never been released before? And the answer is because these archives are huge and everything's, as I say, hiding in plain sight. You know, it's just raw data. How can you go through it all? Mm. So one of the most important things to me is to actually make this a searchable database. So when it all goes public, people can type in healthcare, you know, a date, a person, and actually have things come up that will be useful for historians. Because we do have an amazing amount of media around our presidents, but if you can't search it, you know, information becomes useless.
Right, right. What do you think about your Iranian counterpart who just asked for asylum in the U.S.?
This was so interesting. You know, I think the number one, I thought it was such a brave act. This is, when you're on these trips, there's a lot of security, a lot of control. I can only imagine how it is when you're working for a regime like the Iranian regime. And so for him to break away in the middle of a huge event like the United Nations General Assembly, it has to be well coordinated. And so just straight off the bat, my hat's off to him there. And I think the things that he knows and has filmed will be amazingly, amazingly useful to American intelligence. And I think one of the other interesting things about it, though, is you see, like, how fractured the regime must be over there, because there are lots of people like me, maybe not doing the exact same thing in the exact same way, but many countries have official videographers, have people who travel with their leaders, have lots of photographers, people who are privy to a lot of special things, and this does not happen very often. In fact, I cannot think of another example of this happening. And so I think it just shows you that people do put a lot of trust in us as government photographers and government videographers, and usually that trust is very, very well respected. And so I think this instance definitely shows you how fractured things are all the way up to the top of that government.
But do you think that someone in your position can actually construct an image instead of documenting one?
I think it's very, very hard. It's been done. I think it costs a lot of money. You know, if you read, you know, the selling of the presidency, which is all about Nixon's 1968 campaign, the kind of reinvention of him, and a lot of familiar names are in that book, like Roger Ailes from Fox News was his kind of TV coordinator and stuff, and they really, really pushed a manufactured image of Nixon. But again, it was incredibly expensive to do this, incredibly unwieldy, and sort of quickly became unraveled. You know, the kind of vitriolic media they're putting out in 68 and 72, amazing stuff. Coincidentally, there's one in which he accuses McGovern's plan of putting 47% of Americans on welfare, which is sort of interesting in terms of that number coming up again. But the kind of political ads of the 70s, post-Watergate, post-Nixon, I think showed that this stuff was pushed so hard that Americans were turned off by it, really turned off by it. And when you have someone who is sort of a more natural performer like Ronald Reagan, I don't think it's that they're putting on a big show. I think we really did get to see the real Reagan, you know, from 1980 to 1988. I do think that when people rely on their own authenticity, it's not only the right thing to do, but it's actually the more efficient thing to do. You know, you see the super PACs for Mitt Romney outspending the super PACs for Obama, you know, 10 to 1, 50 to 1, whatever it is,
right,
crazy amount. But you can't really move the needle that much. You know, they need to be outspending them 1,000 to 1 if they want it to stick, because when you are trying to manufacture this stuff, it's really, really hard.
That's interesting, because most people would think that you would have more power in controlling the image of the president and his staff than actually documenting in an authentic way the everyday happenings.
Here's the analogy I would make. We say in comedy, like especially in film fiction comedy, that you can never get away with having an actor say a joke they don't get. You can tell them exactly what to say, you can tell them exactly how to say it, but if you can't explain the joke to them where they actually get the joke, it will never be funny. And I've fallen prey to this, and like you know, I was like, just say it like I'm saying it, it's going to be funny. But it's never, never right.
What do you think describes the president's best qualities?
I think the president's best quality, and I think it's something that you can only learn from a president by looking at footage like mine, is his intellectual curiosity. He actually wants to know how the world works and wants to ask follow-up questions. And I think, you know, as we talked about, the presidency is such a disparate group of meetings and decisions, and you never know what's coming up. And so I think having this sort of broad base of knowledge because you're curious about how everything is amazingly important.
What do you think is the relationship between the ideal and the authentic?
You know, this is a very good question in terms of my favorite advice that I have ever gotten from the president, which is, you know, he always says, never make the good the enemy of the perfect, you know, that old expression. Mm-hmm. And I think seeing him implement that in action was really instrumental for me as someone who, as an artist, and, you know, was always kind of, nothing was good enough, I'll take an extra 6 months, try to make it a little better. And it's actually, you know, working in politics, how to release things on a more strict schedule and being like, this is good enough, this is where it needs to be. Making those kind of decisions, I think, is super important. So the ideal is certainly ideal. These things are good benchmarks. But when they don't fit to reality, it definitely doesn't make sense to try to force it.
Do you have any plans of releasing maybe a documentary or another book, or is this the final kind of chapter in what you did with the president in the last 4 or 5 years?
Well, you know, right now I'm working at Revolution Messaging, where I am heading up their video division, and I make political media for a variety of clients, whether it be labor unions or progressive groups or campaigns. And so kind of looking at politics from a more creative and less documentary angle, and that's been very interesting, but it is still politics. It's still something that I'm working on in politics. But I don't think I have a documentary in me. You know, I like making the stuff that has an effect on how elections go, informing the way people learn about things, you know, and I feel like I've done a lot to enable historians to make a bunch of great documentaries about Barack Obama, but that's not something that I think I want to do myself. And if I did write another book, I think it would definitely, I would like to explore other types of and qualities of footage, even with a more historical and more global look, to sort of see how authenticity reads on film in different cultures, what we do, what we don't film. And why that's important. I mean, that's sort of open-ended, but that is something that I do think about.
Thank you very much, Arun.
Thanks so much.